Welcome to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and staff achieve peak economic and practice efficiency so there is time and energy to focus on patient care and a happy life. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-hosts, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter.
Today's episode is brought to you by ModMed. Do your EHR and PM adapt to your style of practice? The ModMed EHR and PM do, with benefits like remembering preferences and automatically suggesting documentation and billing codes. Urologists voted ModMed the number one urology-specific EHR and PM solution available, built by urologists with input from yours truly. Stop wasting 60 minutes and 200 for each of your open or no-show slot. Go to modmed.com/PRSnetwork. Set up an appointment with the team at ModMed Urology and shift your urology practice into high gear. Imagine a solution on a tablet or the web that works seamlessly with revenue cycle management, analytics, telehealth, payment processing, patient engagement tools, and much more. ModMed is transforming healthcare by placing doctors and patients at the center of care.
Welcome to episode 157 of the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-host, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter. And on today's episode, we are going to answer some more questions. We have a lot of questions coming into the Urology Coding and Reimbursement group, which you can join if you have not already become a member of the group. It's free. If you go to prsnetwork.com/157 for episode 157, you can scroll down on the episode page and you'll see a link to join the group. All right, we're going to answer three questions, two or three, depending on the time, I guess. First one we're going to talk about is chronic care management. We had a question come in about that. And then we also had a question about scrotal lesion, and that gets us into the 10,000 codes or 11,000 codes. Well, let's get started. First one we have is chronic care management. Question is from Blanca, and Blanca says, our office is looking into chronic care management. We know that CCM requires the patient to have two chronic conditions. Most of these patients have prostate cancer and diabetes and or hypertension, which brings me to my question. Our providers will be treating and managing the cancer, But as far as the diabetes go, they are not treating this or managing it in any way. Would we still be able to use our CCM billing? All right, now it's all yours.
All right, sounds good. So it's been interesting as I've gone around and worked with different groups, and chronic care management has become a fairly common service that is provided by urology across the country. And there are a couple of requirements that you have to consider relative to chronic care management. As Blanca actually stated, the patient has to have two or more chronic conditions. And you do have to develop a plan relative to managing those two chronic illnesses. And then the code itself, or the codes themselves, can go on two different tracks. Either one, the services are provided directly by the physician, and you are documenting throughout the month, because these are for a month at a time, throughout the month, the time that the physician spends dealing with those problems, either coordinating care, talking to the patient, you know, anything related to that patient's overall care for those particular disease states. And then the other path is that the support for the patient with chronic care management is provided by staff. Individuals hired by the practice to actually do that follow-up and overall coordination of care relative to those disease states that for which the plan has been developed. So we've got to understand first, Well, so, and then the other requirement is that only one physician who's caring for that patient can bill for chronic care management. And the patient has to sign a document agreeing to have your physician be the chronic care management individual before you can start billing for chronic care management. So you've got several different things to consider. So one, let's drop back and see why, you know, Medicare decided to cover this a few years ago, predominantly because intervention prior to the patient actually seeing an exacerbation of the problem actually has demonstrated cost savings to the system. And so Medicare would like these patients to receive some guidance and constant follow-up to make sure that they're taking care of their diabetes or their hypertension, they're taking their meds, all of those things. And of course, you know, the prostate care, the prostate cancer management is something that the physician is specializing in. And so they're going to want to keep tabs on the patient and make sure that they're following their drug regimen and their visit regimen. So everything related to that prostate cancer. So it really is about managing those chronic diseases to try and keep the patient out of the hospital system and out of seeking more expensive care. As I've read through a lot of these chronic care management documentation, there is a lot of work that is done that is coordinating care for all of these issues. And there have been a number of audits that have been done on these particular chronic care management services over time. And the, you know, many of them have stood up under that scrutiny. But it does require that that documentation supports that there is a plan of care relative to those particular issues. Now, it is chronic care management and not direct care that is required for the code. So the physician that is in charge of this, even if it were a primary care physician providing these services, would still probably lean on other specialists to provide the bulk of the care specific to their other chronic disease states. So as long as you've got everything set up to develop a good plan of care so that, you know, the patient is probably under the care of another physician for some of their diabetes or their hypertension or any of their other chronic disease states, and your office is the group that is coordinating that and encouraging the patient and contacting the patient for that particular disease state, it does follow the chronic care management guidelines. And again, it follows the spirit, more importantly, of what the chronic care management guide or payments were set up to do. Now, most of the urology groups that I've worked with are using a vendor or an outside service to drive their chronic care management team. And these groups are hired and can provide that monthly support. Now, these are typically billed under the codes that are not physician intervention the entire time. And you can still bill E&M codes during the chronic care management period, because again, this is about the coordination of the overall care and making sure the patient is following up on their disease state appropriately. So it requires phone calls throughout the month and making sure the patient's keeping their appointments and taking their drugs, all of those things is that general spirit. So it is a perfectly legitimate approach and a billable event for urology. And in the spirit of what you're looking at, regardless of whether it was a primary care physician or the urologist be in the primary care seat for the prostate cancer, that is a legitimate drive and, again, something that Medicare is leaning towards for overall savings. So there was a long answer to yes, that is something you can do. Now, you do want to either use an outside service that is well proven to work with urology groups, and I know there are a couple out there, a few out there, we'll just say, that can help, or internally, you need to set up some decent protocols to mine your electronic medical record. You need an individual within your group who's really going to drive that chronic care and a system in place so that your staff can make those follow-up calls and document well that they are, in fact, contacting the patient and making sure the patient is part of it to follow the guidelines of the chronic care management. Now, there is also another alternative and is certainly one that I'm a bigger fan of because, as I mentioned at the beginning, chronic care management can only be billed by one physician per month. And so it does require some coordination with primary care. And you do have patients that are coming to you through primary care, and those individuals may have chronic care management provided by the primary care entity. So the patient needs the care, but it depends on what, in fact, the patient's other healthcare providers are doing to help that patient with all of their disease states. So you do need to think about how chronic care management will work with the primary care groups in your area. The alternative is principal care management, which is PCM. Now, it also is focused on disease management. It also requires support. But in that case, the physician is focused on the care of one disease instead of two. That disease can be shorter term, or it can be long term or chronic, just like the chronic care management. And that can be billed by different physicians involved in the patient's care. So it doesn't require that coordination with the other providers. So as you're looking at chronic care management, I would also encourage you to explore the rules and the availability of principal care management for your patients. So both are options. I lean a little bit more towards principal care management for smaller groups because it's a little bit easier to deal with the overall coordination. But I can tell you I've seen groups, both large and small, who are, with the help of vendors, providing chronic care management to their patients.
I've got a couple questions for you. From those groups out there that are using vendors to do this, it's a two-part question. One, you said that seems to be a pretty good way to do that. And two, what is the volume that you're seeing out there for these both the CCM and the PCM as far as number of patients per month that they're actually treating or managing care?
It's a fairly high volume. The number of patients that have chronic conditions in a urology practice is significant. You know, prostate cancer, bladder cancer, kidney cancer. So there are a lot of disease states that patients live with that urologists treat that require, you know, ongoing management and support. So they are high volume services within a lot of urology practices. And it does take a systemic approach to this to make sure that everybody in the practice understands who is eligible, who is not, and ultimately how to get them set up. And then you have got to work with your vendor, and those vendors are pretty good at working with you to get the information back that they develop to add into your electronic medical record. And you do want to keep an eye on that from a compliance perspective, because you are managing that outside vendor who is technically billing under you, under the Incident 2 side of the equation, as a contracted entity or contracted individual. So the documentation needs to go back into your electronic medical record, and you should have the physician review the work that has been done by those groups over time. But it is a decent volume within the urology practice, just because the problems that we deal with in urology.
All right. Ray, do you have any questions?
Mark, in looking at kind of what that pays, how is it considered a more viable option to do chronic care rather than having a patient visit either by telehealth or by inpatient, you know, once a month?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, there you can still bill visits if you are in chronic care. Chronic care is really focused on making sure that the patient is staying on target with their overall meds. And quite frankly, as I look at practices and their schedules, you know, supporting them with staff instead of telehealth or instead of a visit is something that everybody needs to consider. There's just far too much volume, and everybody is far too overworked and overbooked to really keep bringing those patients in or even scheduling for telehealth unless they need a specific visit. And this is the assistance that's required in between visits to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. So it is, again, one of those areas where Medicare saw some opportunities. They tried it out, and they really saw the return on investment. And so providing that service is not only viable from a financial standpoint, but, you know, overall the system has demonstrated that investment is worthwhile for the system and the care of the patient.
Yes, it looks like it would be real good for the patient. And basically, that would just help pay for either a vendor to do it or the staff to do it, if you've got a number of patients that fit that category.
It does actually pay enough to generate some profit too.
All right. All right, let's move on to the next question. Question comes in, and it came into our urology coding and reimbursement group. And it's the question is, hi, what CPT code set would you bill for excision of scrotal lesions? And in parentheses, she says, path report is benign. Would you code with the 11420 through 11426 codes, or the 11106 through the 11107, or 54060, or something else? And basically, the summary of the note was numerous scattered superficial skin lesions, in total 20 centimeters of skin removed. And we began by marking out the areas of concern with elliptical incisions. There were numerous lesions, but they were spread out enough that we decided to do multiple separate incisions. After the lesions were marked, the skin was anesthetized with 0.5% McCain. Incisions were made sharply along the previous marked ellipsis. The skin was carefully dissected sharply from the underlying Dartos tissue. Hemostasis was achieved with bipolar cautery. This was repeated for all lesions. All right, and we probably should read some descriptions. So we'll start with the 11420 and that series. And the 11420 is excision benign lesion, including margins, except skin tag, unless listed elsewhere. And that's for the skin, neck, hands, feet, genitalia. And that code is excised diameter 0.5 centimeters or less. And then the remainder of the code set, the 11421 through 426, are various sizes of lesions going from the 0.5 or less up to over 4 centimeters. And then as far as the next code set is the 1106 that was asked about. And the 1106 and 1107, the 1106 is incisional biopsy of skin, e.g. wedge, and with the parentheses, including simple closure when performed, semicolon, single lesion. So that is the 6 and 7 are the incisional biopsy of the skin. So the final one is the 54060, which is destruction of lesions, and it's penis, for example, condyloma papillona, simple surgical excision. So that's the 54060. Okay. Mark, you want to dig into it?
Sure. So the code series that you're going to want to use is the 1142 series. And unfortunately, with the information we're given, we can't actually give you a specific code. This is a per lesion code, and you're supposed to multiple units depending on the sizes of each lesion that was removed. The note says that numerous lesions were removed and a total of 20 centimeters of skin was removed. But that actually doesn't allow us to drive deep enough to pick your code set. So you'd want to go back to the physician and have him or her give us some further information onto what lesions, what size lesions were there. And it's about the lesion diameter. That's what the size is there. So we need a little more information to give you the exact codes, but the 1142 series is correct. Given what she said otherwise was the elliptical excisions and the fact that they were sharply dissected of over the underlying dartos tissue. Obviously the 54060, which states lesion, sounds good, but that is unfortunately for the penis, not the scrotum. And we went to the 11420 because genitalia is included in that series. And it doesn't sound like we're doing wedge biopsies, which is the 11106 and 07. So it is the 114 series. I know it's not common in urology, but occasionally you do stuff that is only integumentary in that. And there are codes within that series that we do touch. Those codes specifically, we have malignant lesion removals, and we also have the codes that we deal with for debridement relative to some of our disease states. So we've got a couple of others that we would use in that section, and we can use, if we do, adjacent tissue transfers from the one from the 10,000 series code. So don't be afraid to look at the integumentary system, and don't be afraid to move outside of the 50,000 series for the services that you provide. But you do need to follow the guidelines for each one of those areas. And then the last thing I'll mention is the 11420 series does have MUEs. And MUEs, of course, we've talked about before, the medically unlikely edits, are essentially limitations on what the computer would consider an appropriate number of times that should be billed. So the 11420 series, most of the lower ones, the smaller ones, I think it's 2 centimeters or less, will allow 3 different lesions. And then greater than that, it's 2 lesions each time. Now, those are all AJIs, or the adjudication indicators are clinical, not date of service driven. So you could exceed the MUE. Those are data service. No, they're clinical. Those 3, the AJI indicator of 3, do allow you to appeal to get over the medically unlikely edits, but typically they will require an appeal. So given that number of lesions, you may have some appeals coming your way to get all of those paid.
Ray, do you have any questions?
So, Mark, in the case that we just reviewed, the docs would have to go back and document how many excisions and what size they were in order to appropriately code it, correct?
That is correct.
All right. And when you're billing these, so you're obviously billing within these different codes, and the 11426 is based on the size, and you're paying attention to the MUEs, but you're going to go ahead and bill it anyway if you have multiple, and that if you have more than whatever the MUE is in that for that particular lesion. So let's say you have over, 4 or more 1 centimeter lesions, you would go ahead and bill that and then appeal it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay.
And we might add that for those that are not used to looking at our FAR MUEs, they're all listed in coding today, and they're usually located under the modifier location.
Yep, quick reference. You can go check out all that information there, and it gives the rationales and the indicators, as well as what the units are. Okay, well, that's what we got for this episode. Let's get some final thoughts and then wrap this thing up. Mark, final thoughts.
Yeah, so today we covered some codes that aren't typically in the urology wheelhouse, if you will, the 50,000 series and your E&M codes. So remember that the CPT book is available to you across the board. I know many of you use different codes on different sections, but don't forget those as you go through that. And understand that the overall goals of the codes and the requirements of each one of those codes. And with chronic care management and principal care management, do take the time to learn the detail requirements. There's lots of information out there on MLN articles, vendor support. There are tools, IT software tools that can help you with that. So make sure your infrastructure is set up well to run those particular service codes, but don't be afraid of those. They are a part of care that is important and has been identified by Medicare as very important.
Ray, final thoughts.
Over the last yay many months, you've seen lots of emails from us and podcasts all talking about the need to document for reimbursement. The skin lesions are a typical example that the physician needs to have a working concept of the rules, an understanding in order to document appropriately so that the coder can code exactly what they need to in order for the doc to get paid. So again, we encourage you to spend, and it won't take you long, just a few minutes, a couple of days or so, and you can get that basic concept so that your documentation will state exactly what is needed to get you paid for the work you do. And I bet Scott's going to mention something about CPT, about coding today, giving you all the information you need.
Yes, we'll wind this up. I got three things to say. Number one, special early bird pricing for our Urology Advanced Coding and Reimbursement Seminar in Las Vegas ends on September 18th. And so we want to make you aware of that. Get registered. You can learn a lot of these concepts and how to document for reimbursement. That comes in a two-day seminar, and we go over a lot of this. And it's, as they say, drinking from a fire hose. So you a lot of great information there, and you can learn this, a lot of these concepts and what we're talking about in the two-day seminar. And then you obviously need to take it back and apply it in your practice. All right, the second thing was that I wanted to mention is we do have an online version of the, you know, education piece, and that's our documentation, coding, and billing fellowship or certification, depending if you're a urologist, APP, or a coder and biller or admin. So you can register for that as well. Those, again, help each respective group with the concepts and the details of urology coding. So that's the important piece, is really understanding the nuances in urology. And the final thing I will mention is AUA Coding Today. AUA Coding Today, you can get a free trial and just check it out if you'd like to. You can go to auacodingtoday.com, or you can check out all three of these, as well as the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Group, on the episode page, which is prsnetwork.com/157. Final thing I'll mention is we want to, again, thank ModMed for supporting this episode. If you're looking for an EHR or practice management, or you want to find out more from them, you can go to modmed.com/PRS network for special offers for our audience. That's all we got for today. Ray, take us out.
Happy coding.
Thank you for listening to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and their staff maximize income and efficiencies so there's time and energy for patient care and a happy life. Special thanks to Carl Painter for the music today. You can find his music on Spotify under his record label, The Juicery.